The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. It's the story of your
life. You're moving down the page. Morning glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Greetings, everyone. I'm Hugh Hewitt, inside the Beltway on this wonderful day in May. I think it's the 6th of May. I'm pretty sure it's the 6th of May, but it is a wonderful day in the 6th of May in the year of our Lord, 2021. Got a great program today, including Dr. Francis Collin, director of NIH, Congressman Gallagher, Congressman Banks, Senator Hawley. We've got Dr. Michael Oren, Ambassador Oren from Israel, on the latest goofballness there. Let me begin the rundown. It is an unfortunate week in the House of Representatives for Republicans. I am a longtime friend of Liz Cheney. I know her father, her mother, and her sister, and I know the Congresswoman. They are all guests on the show, and whatever happens, Liz Cheney will continue to be a guest on the show because she is a vibrant and important voice for American strength abroad, and she knows her stuff. It appears that she's going to be replaced by Elise Stefanik in the civil war within the House GOP, which is always unfortunate. I always ask myself, are there not enough targets outside of the tent to focus on? But this is not going to go away, and it's going to happen, and I bet you Liz Cheney just grits her teeth and moves forward, and I think she'll be reelected in Wyoming, and she'll continue to give great leadership. But that is the lead story, how Elise Stefanik rose to the cusp of GOP leadership. She's a good congresswoman, too. She's a great congresswoman, and we'll get past this. It'll be fine. We'll move forward. I think the former president needs to stop shooting inside the tent at Mitch McConnell, Vice President Pence, and others, including Liz Cheney, and focus on Joe Biden, because it is the Biden administration that is bankrupting us, and it's the Biden administration that is reverting to Obama-era appeasement with Iran and China, and we need to focus on them, not each other. Now, we also have good news. Why Democratic departures from the House have Republicans salivating, according to the New York Times. And with 18 months left before the midterms, a spate, I love that word, spate, it reminds me of spatula, which reminds me of chocolate chips. A spate of Democratic departures from the House is threatening to erode the party's slim majority in the House. Wouldn't that be bad? Five House Democrats from competitive districts have announced they won't seek re-election next year. Meanwhile, Greg Sargent and Paul Waldman, who are, you know, nice left-wing people over at the Washington Post, my colleagues there, have an opinion. By delaying a special election, Ron DeSantis owns the lib one more time. Oh, they're crying big tears over there. Representative Alcee Hastings died in Florida on January 6th, and everybody wants his seat. And Ron DeSantis has set the primary election for November the 2nd and the general election for next year, January 11th. Now, that's completely legal. Democrats want it to be tomorrow so they can fill the seat so they can be narrower. They can have a greater majority in the House, and Republicans want a narrower majority in the House. And what a surprise, Ron DeSantis is a Republican, so he's dragging his feet. And I know all this stuff about these poor people aren't represented. Okay, how many of you have called your congressman in the last year? I mean, how many of you have gotten anything done from your congressman? Really? How many of you have a problem going unaddressed in Florida's whatever district it is? You can call me, and I'll help you out. 1-800-520-1234. Call me Congressman Hugh. If you're in his district, give me a call, and I'll treat you exactly the way most congressmen treat their constituents. I'll ask Dwayne to look into it, and that's the way it will go. Meanwhile, the U.S. is backing the waiver of intellectual property protection for COVID-19 vaccines. Now, I'm heterodox on this. I am not orthodox. Senator Cotton is against it. Senator Cornyn is against it. I'm in favor of this. Why are we paid for this stuff? Operation Warp Speed, Donald Trump's great triumph in the last year of his presidency, which accelerated the vaccine production at Moderna, pre-ordered all the vaccines that Pfizer could make from Pfizer, and has powered forward mRNA vaccine research and a whole bunch of other therapies across the world. That was a one-time deal for a pandemic. So I think we have a unique position here, and India is suffering, and we got to help India out, and soon we're going to have to help out Africa. We got revolution beginning to brew in Colombia, which would be a disaster for that fragile democracy. We have the same thing going on in Brazil. Leftists across the world are taking advantage of the chaos. They're all sort of little Rahm Emanuels with uniforms on. Never let a crisis go to waste. We have to help free peoples fight this thing off. It started in China. China poisoned India. And now India needs the help from the United States, and we should help our friends in India. It's that simple to me. The national security issue, everything begins as a national security issue. So if we back the plan to suspend COVID patents and their stock goes down at these companies, I think to myself, think about the, I mean, billions of dollars we gave these companies, or billions of orders that we guaranteed these companies like Pfizer. And don't let left-wing Democrats tell you Operation Warp Speed had nothing to do with it. That's an admission of ignorance of whoever says it. Meanwhile, the national eviction moratorium has been thrown out by a federal district court judge, as I suspected it would. It's overbroad, it's ongoing, unemployment is down, and we need to get landlords their money. Because a lot of landlords are retired people. I want you to think about this. All landlords, you think in your mind, the worst landlord you ever had. And John, if you're listening, Wessinger up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, I loved you, John, but you were a terrible landlord in 1982. Honestly, you put me in a basement with plumbing that was exposed. I probably could have been electrocuted every night, and you charged me $400 a month. There was no heat. It was terrible. So John Wessinger, however, was a small businessman. And if John had not gotten my $400, I mean, he charged every lawyer he could get. He knew they were going to go off to be lawyers and make a living. He didn't care. John was, you know, the original. He was a character out of Dickens. And I hope he's alive. He's a wonderful guy, but he'd steal you blind and he'd never fix anything. So I always think of landlords of John Wessinger and Lonnie, his wife. They ran the chateau where law students ran wild for years and years and years. It was a great place to live. We had great years in the early 80s. But all landlords alike, many of them are small businessmen. If they haven't been paid for a year and a half, they're dying. So there was an emergency. The emergency is over. The judge took a look at it and said, you've exceeded your authority. The eviction is over. The district court in the District of Columbia decided that. The circuit court will reverse it. And then the Supreme Court, I hope, takes it and gives us some clarity on the limits of that law. Moderna has some good news. It says its COVID-19 booster shots show promise against the variants. I hope Pfizer gets a booster shot. I want a booster shot. I don't want to get this disease. You should go get vaccinated. Don't be a dummy. Really, don't be a dummy. Texas legislature set to vote on an election bill, and a bunch of woke corporate people are having heart attacks. And you know what? Republicans roll right over them because the country wants secure voting. The country wants secure voting. You don't have to prove fraud. You can prevent fraud. You can go forward and say, we do not like what happened in the last election cycle. We do not like a lot of the shaking and baking that local election officials did. We do not want secretaries of state making up stuff as they go along. We do not like the precedents that were sent. We're going to change the rules and we're going to require voter ID. And it's all good. And most Americans agree with you. And woke corporate dummies like American Airlines, which decided to join Delta Airlines as a blue airline, forget about them. Americans don't care about them. They really don't. Now, a good corporation is Peloton. It has recalled all of its treadmill. Its CEO has apologized. The Federal Trade Commission or the Consumer Product Safety Commission had warned Peloton that their Tread Plus was dangerous. And Peloton blew them off at first. And then they figured out, well, what do you know? It is dangerous enough that we pull it. So they pulled it and they apologized for not acting quickly. Good on you, Peloton. They'll fix it. It's always in the interest of corporations in America. My longtime partner, I'm a retired lawyer now. Gary Walensky is the greatest product development lawyer in America. He defends corporations whenever they get sued, working around the clock. And I can say this because I no longer have any remote business association with Walensky, and he's an Eagles fan, and we forgive him for that. But greatest products liability trial lawyer I've ever met, defense lawyer. And Gary would always say, and it's hard to believe as he shambles along sputtering Eagle statistics, it's hard to believe he could persuade a jury, but he always does. It is never in the interest of a company to leave a defective product on the market. I mean, he must have said it a million times, and I agree with that. Facebook Oversight Board upholds Trump suspension. What a surprise. Now, I'm going to play for you in segment three my interview with Mark Zuckerberg from last year, where we talked about this board when it was established. And I think this board's a joke. And I told Zuckerberg at the time that, it's a silly board. And the press release was great. Helle Thorning-Schmidt, an oversight board co-chair and former prime minister of Denmark, sought to bolster the body's importance. That line instantly made me think of the prime minister of Finland from Veep. Remember her? She always was going after Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And that's, you know, the former prime minister of Denmark is telling an American company in Silicon Valley whether or not President Trump should be banned from Facebook. Really? Does Mark is a very smart guy. Does he not get the optics of that? They have the, you know, it really, think of the prime minister of Finland. What was her name? Does anyone remember her name? Her name, if we can get some audio, if I had a producer, we would get an audio of that woman in that show. Veep is one of the funniest shows ever. People inside the Beltway tell me if you want to know what the Beltway's like, is you merge a House of Cards with Veep, because it's both of them. Smash them together and you get the Beltway. But I loved that prime minister of Finland and Helle Thorning-Schmidt, an oversight board co-chair and former prime minister of Denmark. I can't even read that without laughing. Sought to bolster the body's importance. You think? But Broadway is reopening, just not until September. I didn't make it through my news. More news. April deportations fell to the lowest monthly level on record. What a surprise. Germans have got a new COVID vaccine. How much money do millennials make? That's another side splitter. Stay tuned, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. As I just tweeted out, Israeli politics makes Game of Thrones look like first grade, House of Cards pre-K. So once a week, I have on Dr. Michael Oren, especially during a season where the leading headline in the Times of Israel is Yamina MK doubles down on opposing coalition with the left. Yamina MK Amichai Chikli, who knows what my pronunciation is, on Thursday firmed up his vow to not serve in any potential unity government presided over by his own party leader, saying he would vote against such a coalition if it were officially proposed. I think that's not good for Mr. Bennett. Dr. Michael Oren joins us from Israel. Am I right about that? Have I penetrated the depths of Israeli coalition politics?
You have. Ani berad with the cop. Okay. Okay, one second. I have to explain to a cop why I'm on the radio and pulling over to the side of the road.
Well, you want me to talk to him?
a nation of laws here.
Let anyway, us listen
what's
in.
What's going to happen now? What was your question again?
I was going to say, Yamina MK, I'd like to talk to the officer. I want to tell him to write you up. Honestly, he can't let you go.
He can't. In the middle of a highway, pulled over. What was your question again?
It's a Yamina MK Amichichikli, if I'm pronouncing it right. Does that do?
He says
he's not joining any coalition. Does that doom any labor, a right-wing coalition? Is it over?
No, it's not over. It just makes it more difficult. Because that means Naftali Bennett's party goes from 7 seats down to 6 seats. And which means that they have to take one more seat from the Arab list, which really nobody wants. But I think at that point, you know, if you're going to take seats from the Arab list, what's the difference of one seat or, you know, two seats? It's not that much. But the question is whether Netanyahu will convince other members of either Gideon Saar's party or Bennett's party to vote against this government. And that could be very difficult for Naftali Bennett. At the end of the day, it's really up to Bennett. Does he want to be prime minister of Israel? Does he want to be the head of the Yamina party? And he knows that to become prime minister of Israel, he will have to give up a large share of his base, which will vote for other right-wing parties and not for his.
So the question is, do you want to be prime minister of Israel badly enough for 2.5 years that you will abandon your political future? Because you can't recover from this. If you cross the aisle and you're not Winston Churchill, you can't recover.
And that's really what that's the rub of the whole deal. Why? Because Bennett's looking at a situation where I could say I'm going to join this coalition, but we may not succeed in actually setting it up. In which case, we go to a fifth round of elections, and I go to the fifth round of elections without my base. So everyone's already looking at the fifth round of elections.
And we also look forward 5 years. I mean, this goes by in a blink of an eye. I can remember campaigning for Gerald Ford. If you want a long career in Israeli politics and you start by putting the knife into Benjamin Netanyahu, does anyone ever forget?
Well, certainly not in Likud, because Likud is not a party. Likud is a family. And Bibi's the head of that family. He's the papa. And people do not forget. And those people have bolted the Likud to join Gideon Saar will not be let back into the Likud.
Well, this is very interesting to me. Like I said, before the policeman pulled you over, Israeli politics is like Game of Thrones plus House of Cards, and I'm not even beginning to get there. So I ask you this every week, and we've been doing 5 rounds of elections or 4 rounds of elections with a fifth on the right, it seems. What's going to happen?
Well, I always say it's premature to eulogize Benjamin Netanyahu. And I also say that, you know, all he has to do is not lose in order to win. And by not losing, means he goes to another round of elections and he gets to be prime minister for another 4 or 5 months. And he takes it from there. And that's what he's done for the last 2.5 years. So this is anybody's guess what Naftali Bennett is going to do. My guess is that he balks at it because everyone's thinking about the fifth round of elections. That's why Bibi couldn't put together a coalition, you know, because his very right-wing parties would not join a government that was supported by the Arab country, Arab parties, even from outside the government, because they're thinking about the fifth round of elections.
So here, my question, Dr. Oren, but Prime Minister Netanyahu is alleged to have danced with Ra'am. No one saw him dance. It's just that the reports say he danced with Ra'am. Can he really object now if Bennett dances with Ra'am or the joint list?
He can do whatever the heck he wants to. He can. And Bibi is just going to attack this potential coalition as a left-wing coalition, a dangerous left-wing coalition. And it does have some left-wing elements in it. It's pretty much a centrist coalition at the end of the day. Bibi will do as Bibi will do, and he's a master politician. And he will act very swiftly to delegitimize Bennett and Yair Lapid and company. Whether he'll succeed at this point, I'm a betting man. I would still put my money on Netanyahu.
Okay, last question. In terms of the impact of this dance, the second part of the dance, is it really going to change people's minds for the fifth round of elections? In other words,
it will not.
What'd you say?
It will not, because the BB camp, the Netanyahu camp, is a solid camp. There may be some erosion, but there will also be erosion on the other side of the aisle. Israel is stuck here, and as long as Netanyahu is in politics, I think it will remain stuck.
All right, did you get a ticket?
No, I did. I just pulled over the side. It was very nice, actually.
Oh, doggone
it. I told him I was talking to you and highly respected.
I really wanted to talk to him. I talked my way out of a ticket when I was going down to co-host a debate with Jake Tapper and Dana Bash by playing the debate card. You played the radio talk show host in America card. That's a good card, I think, in Israel. I'll remember that. Stay tuned, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Let them hear you. Yeah. Let's go. Oh, oh, oh.
Minutes after the hour, America, Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Rising Up Congressman Mike Gallagher of the great state of Wisconsin. Pick this one just for you, Congressman. How are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm sure it has something that leads into an Aaron Rodgers joke. But
oh, no. I'm going to bring up your in fact, Aaron Rodgers was a great host of Jeopardy, as you know. And I want to play Green Bay Packers Jeopardy to begin with you. So it's Green Bay Packers for 500. The answer is Royce Newman.
I have no idea where this is going.
What's the question? Remember, your answer must be in the form of a question.
Our fourth round draft pick.
That's it. The most amazing draft pick in the history of the Packers, because it was made in the fourth round when everyone expected them to pass. They expected them just not to play. Yeah. So Royce Newman is great. But you know what else? You've got Josh Myers. You folks up in Wisconsin finally figured it out. You drafted an Ohio State lineman.
There we go. Well, we're fired up about Newman, too, from Ole Miss. So it was a good draft, which is the irony of this whole situation. It was a win-now draft, which seemingly would give Rodgers everything that he wants. So I don't get this whole situation. I think it's just ego-driven and feelings have been hurt, and we're so close to winning a Super Bowl, it just drives you crazy.
Wait a minute. He wanted a receiver. You got him a 5'9" guy from Clemson. I know Amari Rodgers dazzled in the championship. He's 5'9". What is Rodgers supposed to do, get on his knees and throw the ball to find the guy?
Well, we currently have the best receiver in the NFL and had the number one offense in the league last year. So I'm not sure what more we can do to surround him with weapons. So that problem's solved. Whether this is a contract problem or, you know, he's still fired up about Jordan Love, which is where Rodgers has a point. Drafting Jordan Love was one of the stupidest decisions the franchise has made in its entire history. So I don't get that part of it, but the whole thing is an absolute mess.
Congressman, I understand, Roger. If you get sent out of the room when the most important decision is being made by the conference. Really, you don't feel very good about that, right? So they put him on the bench at the most important moment in the most important game of the season. I mean, they said, go, we'll take a field goal here. That's what he's up to. I mean, I'd be upset, too, if I got sent out of the Salem meetings whenever the talk show hosts were together. That's what we do with Gallagher, but, I mean, Mike Gallagher, not the other Mike Gallagher, but, you know, he doesn't feel good about
the
that.
The lesser Mike Gallagher. The lesser yes, Mike Gallagher.
Mike Gallagher, wait, the lesser.
That's right. Was that a Hamilton song at the beginning? So is this some sort of Room Where It Happens joke that you were teeing up this whole time?
Yes. You finally figured it out. You've been finally, you're ready and you're ready. Let me get to the important stuff. I just talked to Francis Collins, director of the NIH, about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine pause. He defends it. Okay, we disagree. I talked to him about the CDC screw-ups at the beginning of the process. He admits it. He gave credit to Operation Warp Speed, though not to President Trump by name. He did to Alex Azar and others as being absolutely crucial. So there was a little bit of credit. How do you generally assess, as a PhD and a smart guy, the communication abilities of our professional scientists in the government, CDC, FDA, NIH? He's very good at it. He's much better than anyone else. I wish he was on the stage all the time. But generally speaking, I don't think these folks should be in front of a camera ever.
Yeah, I think their communication skills have been pretty abysmal over the past year, and it's resulted in a lot of pain and suffering. Look no further than the mask debate, right? I mean, you know, Fauci was out there telling us, don't wear masks, and, you know, saying that they didn't really make a difference. And it turns out that was a lie intended not to cause a run on masks at the hospitals, and we discover that subsequently, and I think it completely undermines any confidence in public messaging. The testing debacle at the beginning of this crisis, I think there will be books written about how the FDA and the CDC screwed that up and had a contaminated lab in Atlanta and how that cost us a month. And really, that was the critical month. I think that was an absolute disaster. And then I just don't know along the way how all of this got politicized. Things that should not be politicized, or that science got religiousized. And by that, I mean there was this expectation that you had to have a blind allegiance to anything coming out of Fauci's mouth and you weren't allowed to question it. Well, that was absurd because the essence of science is the scientific method, which involves developing a working hypothesis and then actively trying to disprove it, right? In other words, the essence of science is not accepting anything as true. It's rigorously testing your hypotheses against reality. And we lost that along the way. And I still don't understand. And right now, I worry that it's creeping into the debate about vaccination. I myself have confidence in the vaccine. I actually think it's a remarkable accomplishment of the Trump administration, how quickly they developed this in record time. I think it's a remarkable accomplishment of the free world. And in simplest terms, you can say China gave the world the virus and America gave the world the vaccine. Right now, we should be exploiting that vaccine diplomacy in order to undermine the Chinese Communist Party. But for whatever reason, I think because of the failure of messaging that you referenced, now people are more skeptical about the vaccine than I think they should be. I'm not forcing it on anybody, but people don't want to get it because they just don't trust the public health establishment.
Well, that's why I spoke to Dr. Collins about Operation Warp Speed and the need to drain politics from this. It was an incredible achievement. Donald Trump deserves the credit for that achievement as leader of the executive branch and approver of the Alex Azar initiated Operation Warp Speed. And when the left fights back against that narrative or attempts to capture credit for the vaccines, it undermines the vaccine. They do not seem to understand anything on the left side. But I also have to say on the right side, we got some quacks out there peddling your DNA gets changed by our mRNA vaccine origin stuff. I talked about that with Dr. Collins. There is blame enough to go around. But the way to defeat that is to give credit to everyone for trying to do their best when, in fact, they're trying to do their best. Mike Gallagher.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's hard for us to give the Trump administration the credit it deserves for really slashing through the bureaucracy or bending the bureaucracy to its will and developing this record time. If we are, you know, suggesting that the vaccine is a secret way for Bill Gates to implant a tracker into your body. And I just, because you referenced it at the beginning, Hugh, I think the J&J pause was incredibly destructive and ill-advised. It was not warranted at all. And I think we will learn that far more people suffered as a result of not getting the vaccine because of the pause, then suffered as a result of any side effect of the vaccine itself. So, yeah, I don't understand. It seemed at the closing moments of the campaign in 2020, Trump himself was out there talking about how we're going to have the vaccine approved. It's almost like a miracle. And then suddenly the entire narrative has shifted. And I don't know if that's just a reflexive dislike of anything that, you know, the Biden administration says, therefore we must be against it and put ourselves on the opposite side. But again, I just get back to this basic point that I think Trump and his entire administration deserves enormous credit for Operation Warp Speed and the development of really not just this vaccine, but the entire mRNA technology that's going to be with us for a long time, as well as really reinitiating an investment in synthetic biotechnology that finally gives us an opportunity to compete with some of the Chinese companies that were outpacing us in that space.
Now, Congressman, while I've got you, I want to cover two things. One, the GOP conference is having a civil war. I don't want you to get involved in it. Would you just stand up and give a message for me, many of whom have appeared on my show? Are there not enough targets in America that the Republicans have to shoot at each other? I mean, that's my message. Would you just stand up, say it, and sit down? Yeah. Because I just can't believe we're doing it again. It's like 1963 with Goldwater and Rockefeller, which carried on for 3 years, and it was a disaster for the party.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the Packers having a civil war when they got to the NFC Championship last season. I mean, House Democrats under Speaker Pelosi have been ruthless and efficient in advancing a radical progressive agenda that is out of step with where the American people are. They have misinterpreted a very narrow election victory for a mandate and are even bragging in some cases about passing the most progressive legislation since the New Deal. That is what we need to be focused on 24/7. That is how we win back the House in 2022. And any second that we are distracted from that or shooting at ourselves is really a missed opportunity. It's an own goal. I mean, I just don't understand it. We have to be focused on highlighting how this agenda that Pelosi and Schumer and really AOC and the squad are advancing, because that's where the center of gravity is in the Democratic Party right now, is bad for states like mine. And it's just out of step with the mainstream American who does not want a radical progressive agenda rammed down their throats.
Second important question not to get away with. I'm heterodox on the question of patent suspension. I'm all in favor of helping India any way we can. Not only is it humanitarian, it is also strategically vital that our closest ally in the region, most proximate to CCP-driven expansion other than Taiwan, get everything we can give them, every moment we can give it to them. We've got to help India because it is China that poisoned them, the Chinese Communist Party that poisoned India, and it should be the United States that helps them most. What do you think about patent suspension?
I'm somewhat, I need to dig into the issue a little bit, Hugh, but I'm similarly inclined in that I think we have a huge opportunity right now to help what is not a formal ally, but certainly needs to be a deeper partner in any scenario going forward geopolitically. India is really a key piece of the puzzle, if not the key piece of the puzzle when it comes to countering the Chinese Communist Party over the long term. India is obviously suffering greatly right now, and therefore I think it makes sense to provide them any resources that we have available. Obviously, we have to take care of our own citizens first and foremost, but I do think we have the resources in order to do a little vaccine diplomacy here that would not only be the right thing to do, but it will also help us geopolitically in terms of building a bridge and deepening our ties with India. I have to believe, Hugh, though you're the legal expert, not me, that we can do that in a way that still protects our drug companies' investment in innovation and various vaccine technology, and really what is critical about why the United States tends to lead the world in pharmaceutical innovation. You know, I haven't yet discovered how to thread that deal exactly. But
I know how. So you give them a giant subsidy for doing it. You compensate them for pension suspension. And it becomes so expensive that we do it very rarely. But those companies' shareholders who are being punished are compensated for the fact that their interests must be sublimated to those of the United States national interest and to the Indian people. By the way, I'd also do it in Colombia, because we have a crisis in Colombia. I only have a minute for you. Are you tracking our strongest ally in South America is under siege from the left, and we've got to help them?
Absolutely. I tend to think that we neglect our own hemisphere, just because we've actually been historically blessed in terms of, you know, having neighbors that are relatively friendly. You know, until something washes up at the southern border itself, we tend to neglect what's going on further south and in South America. And we do so at our own peril, because obviously the Russians and the Chinese are heavily engaged in South America. They're expanding their influence. In many cases, Iran is expanding its influence as well in that area. And so we have enemies in that area. We have allies as well. And we need to stand up to our enemies and support our allies.
100% agree. Congressman Mike Gallagher of the great state of Wisconsin, good to talk to you. Just remember, when you needed a center, you got Josh Myers from Ohio State. If they just drafted Buckeyes, maybe the Packers could get the ball over and get to the Super Bowl with the Browns this year. Thank you, Congressman. ReliefFactor.com. I'll bet you Josh Myers uses that. Isn't it amazing the Packers drafted someone in the fourth round instead of just going to the bench? ReliefFactor.com, $19.95. You'll never bench yourself. You'll never take yourself out of the game if you're taking ReliefFactor.com. You will avoid Packers disease if you take ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 is the starter pack. That's a three-week supply. Plenty of time to test on whether or not it helps you with your minor aches and pains, which persist, whether it's in your shoulder or your back or your neck. And a lot of people have neck pain. A lot of people wonder, what am I going to do about it? Try ReliefFactor.com. Support for the temporary relief of the minor aches and pains. Morning Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. It's a rule on the Hugh Hewitt Show, and we have a smart Marine on. We got to follow with a smart Navy guy, Congressman Gallagher. Last hour, this hour, Congressman Jim Banks, Chairman of the House Republican Study Committee. Good morning, and representing Indiana's 3rd Congressional District. I want to remind you, he's a graduate of IU. We slow down a bit. They do have a leap year football program. Every 4 years, IU competes in the Big Ten, so we want to honor that. Good morning, Congressman.
Hey, good morning, Hugh. We've also put our basketball program back together with a help from a old Ohio State guy, Thad Mata, and Mike Woodson, Dane Fife. They're all coming to IU to coach basketball next season. I got a good feeling we're going to beat Ohio State in basketball. I don't know about football yet, but we're getting there.
To each their own spheres. I always say that, to each their own spheres. I'm never going to rag on Indiana basketball. I'm no dummy. Congressman, let's begin with an issue I raised with Congressman Gallagher last hour. When the conference meets next week, I hope someone stands up and says, aren't there enough targets that we have to shoot at each other? Because I like both Liz Cheney and Elise Stefanik. I think they're both great Americans. I do not get civil war when the Democrats are busy destroying this country's economy and engaged in impeachment. When do we get through this part of the bloodletting?
Yeah, I hope it's over with next week and we can move on quickly, Hugh. I mean, and that's the whole point. I mean, this is all about Republicans being on the same page, the same message, a single focus, and that's winning back the majority. And I've been outspoken about Liz Cheney's ability to do that recently. I mean, this is we had the vote. It was overwhelming to keep her several weeks ago. And even since then, many of us had hoped that this would temper down, the situation would change. We would all return our focus on saving our country by winning back the majority. And that's become increasingly difficult to do because of some of the rhetoric from both sides. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I don't think we can get there unless we make a change in the conference chair position. I say that out of respect for my friend Liz. She has every right to be outspoken about the former president, outspoken about the direction of the Republican Party. But when you have a leadership position and you represent every single one of us in the Republican conference, you forfeit, I believe, the right to be to bash the Republican conference, the majority of the Republican members. And when you're not focused on what we're focused on, which is winning back the majority, then I question whether or not you should be in that situation. That's why we will have a vote and a vote of confidence next week on Liz maintaining her role as the conference chair.
Is there any way to retrieve the situation, any way to have, like, for example, co-chairs of the conference, Stefanik and Cheney, where they get together and there's a meeting between those two and the whip Scalise and the leader McCarthy and you as the RSC, which is the largest group of the largest caucus within the conference? To avoid this, is there any way? Because civil wars are not easily stopped when they've begun. It's not good for a party.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way at this point to do that. I mean, even Liz has been pretty clear that she's not fighting back. she's not making phone calls and asking her allies to support her. It appears a change will be inevitable. The best way I can put it, Hugh, is that the conference chair is the chief spokesperson for our party. And if you're the conductor of the orchestra and 99% of the orchestra isn't following your tune, then either we have to change the orchestra or we have to change the conductor. And in this case, I believe that change is inevitable. It needs to happen. It's healthy for it to happen. That doesn't mean that at the same time we're purging Liz Cheney from the Republican conference. And she can still bring diversity of thought, diversity of opinion about Donald Trump, about January 6th, about any other issue or the direction of the Republican Party. She can still bring that diversity of thought to the Republican Party. But at this point, she is out of sync with the most of our conference. And that's why I believe the change needs to occur.
Have you and Liz Cheney ever voted opposite of each other on a defense or national security related issue?
No, you know, that's the irony of it. No. When it comes to issues, we're almost always on the same page, Hugh. I mean, I wrote a memo. You've talked about it, about the direction of the Republican Party maintaining its position and cementing its relationship with working class voters. And this is where the difference occurs. I mean, I believe that if we combine the values of the party of Reagan with the populist messages and views of the party of Donald Trump, we will have a winning formula that will not just win back the majority in 2022, but win back the White House in 2024. Liz was the only outspoken person in the Republican Party who opposed the views of that memo. So I think this is largely about message. It's largely about rhetoric. It's largely about the direction and belief about where this party is heading in the future. And when we're focused on the past, when we're focused on personalities, we're not focused on winning back the majority. And that's where the frustration for me with my friend Liz as the conference chair, as our spokesperson, that's where this has come to the boiling point that it has, and why I believe that a change needs to occur.
Okay, it is what it is, and the conference is not my conference, and therefore it's among the members, and you guys have to hash it out. I just wish whatever happens that you turn forward and people get on to, for example, an issue I want to talk to you about, I talked about with Congressman Gallagher. I'm heterodox on the issue of patent suspension because India needs to be our ally in a generational confrontation with our adversary, the Chinese Communist Party, and because it's a humanitarian disaster on a level with which we have no previous acquaintance. And so while I would make whole those companies who are going to pay a price and those shareholders who will be hurt by that suspension of patent protection, I think the Republican strategists, of whom you are one, need to be in the conference saying, hey, this is different. This is a category of one. This is India and maybe, by the way, Colombia and Brazil. We have to help our allies who are going to be steadfast in the war for civilization against totalitarian free markets, which is the odd, oxymoronic, but nevertheless real threat emerging from the CCP.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And this is the Republican Party is the only party that's focused on that threat, on the threat of the Chinese Communist Party, on the threat from coming from a big tech today. The Republican Party is the only party that's focused on addressing those threats. But while the Democrat Party has wholly sided with big tech, with Wall Street interests that appease the Chinese Communist Party, allowing for our IP to be stolen, for our jobs to continue to flow overseas, and that's the juxtaposition that we find in American politics today. The paradigm shift and the coalitional transformation that I write about in the Working Class Memo that you can find at workingclassgop.com, that I talk about in this memo about the platform that we need to embrace moving into this midterm election that will allow us to win back the majority. So what happened Hugh yesterday with the Facebook decision should be troubling to every American on the right or the left, that we have big tech oligarchies that are controlling American society in such a substantial way. You talk often about Shoshana Weissman's surveillance.
The age of capitalism.
Capitalism. This is a pivotal read for our moment, written by a leftist. Matt, I picked it up when it was on Barack Obama's reading list a couple of years ago, and I read this book, and it sums up this threat better than anything else that I could potentially read. And the part of it, the takeaway from that book, Hugh, is when she talks about what big tech companies are doing to hurt us like animals, H-E-R-D, hurting us, and how they're effectively doing that. And the decision by the Facebook Supreme Court yesterday just goes to show what Weissman was warning us would happen, that's going to continue to happen, and change society with it in a way that should be troubling to every American.
I think you mean Ruboff, but in any event, the new book by Josh Hawley, The Tyranny of Big Tech, that is now a useful, easier read than Shoshana Rubin's book, because it's in English and it's not by a neo-Marxist. Let me go to what happened yesterday after the Oversight Board ruled. I'm not going to call the Supreme Court because it adds dignity to it. I've argued about it on the show, Mark Zuckerberg himself. I've played that. But yesterday, the head of the board came out, and the head of the board is a former president of Denmark. I just had to laugh. It's sort of like the Finnish prime minister from Veep. I don't know if you ever watched Veep, but the idea that an oversight board made up of 3/4 of Americans are setting standards for speech. Mike McConnell, the former federal judge, should resign from that board because, as I told Mark Zuckerberg, and I don't demonize him, it's just silly. America sets the standard in free expression, not Europe.
Yeah, this is why the work from Ken Buck on the Judiciary Committee, the member from Colorado, is so important, digging into antitrust issues. Hugh, and a Republican study committee, the best way I can explain, I mean, we're 3/4 of the Republican conference. We're focused solely on policy. So we're even having this internal debate about, what do we do about big tech? Repeal Section 230, reform it, antitrust issues. We're going to continue to be forward and out there on addressing.
Have me come talk to him, Congressman, because I believe in expropriation. I really do. Don't go anywhere, America, Congressman Jim. So I'm for expropriating the railroads at some point, and that means big tech. Stay tuned, America. Jim Banks, always a pleasure, Congressman. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.